Good Monday afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large for August 12th, 2019 on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead on our show, another new Tyson facility is open in downtown Springdale. In just a moment, Zuzanna Sitek reports a manufacturing automation center began operation last week. And in our second half hour, bringing all kinds of musical interests together for one night, to discuss how to make the region's music scene more cohesive and more attractive to musicians and fans. After our show this afternoon, it will be time for NPR's Here and Now. Today, the Grand Canyon National Park is 100 years old this year. A series of conversations about the park begins this afternoon with a look at the geology of the canyon and how it was formed. Here and Now from 1 to 3 today on 91.3. There is an excessive heat warning in effect this afternoon for three counties, Sebastian, Crawford, and Franklin in western Arkansas and much of eastern Oklahoma. Temperatures will advance into triple figures with heat index values up to 116. The combination of hot temperatures and high humidity will combine to create a dangerous situation in which heat illnesses are possible. Northwest Arkansas has a heat advisory until 8 tonight, afternoon highs in the mid-90s, heat index readings in the lower triple digits. And the Springdale Downtown Runaround 5K is October 5th, but an 8-week training program designed to have participants ready for the 5K launches tonight at 6 at the Jones Center. The Couch to 5K kickoff costs $40. It's open to any runner 13 years or older and will meet from now until that 5K in October. Each weekly run led by an instructor. There will also be coaching about nutrition. More at the Facebook page for Jones Center Fitness. This is Ozarks at Large. What started out as a building to service Tyson Foods live operation vehicles in the company's early days is now its manufacturing automation center. Tyson celebrated the opening of this third downtown facility last week. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek was in Springdale for the event, and she tells us more about the work that will be done there.
With the push of a button, Tyson Foods celebrated the opening of its newest facility in downtown Springdale.
Down the one. Two, three, rest and hold.
The button activated two large robotic arms that swung into action to move boxes from a conveyor belt to pallets. Marty Lynn, who is the director of the Tyson Manufacturing Automation Center, gave the media a tour of the new building known as T-Mac.
You got to see the robots actually putting together pallets. And that's really the function of this room, is be able to try out pieces of equipment like this and be able to have our team members come and do training on the equipment before it actually shows up at their facility.
Once the robotic arms are shipped to a plant, Lynn says they'll bring in other equipment for testing and training. Next, we head to the second floor, which peers down into the innovation lab through a row of floor-to-ceiling windows.
We're going to end up going down into this room. This is the innovation lab. And one of the things that is important for us is being able to keep intellectual property secure. And so we have the ability to lock this lab down and not have any visibility into it with the touch of a button.
A button on Lynn's phone activates the glass. It turns an opaque white and blocks the robots below from view. Eventually, we end up on the other side of the windows and in the innovation lab.
So this is the space that we saw from up above, the innovation lab space. Right now, we have suppliers from ABB and FANUC and B&R who have set up some demo cells showing different types of robots and different types of applications that we would work towards.
There's a robot that's packing small trays using suction cups, a conveyor belt that uses linear induction motors, and another robot arm with different attachments that can handle different products. In Tyson's case, Lynn says that means chicken, beef, or pork.
I mean, the key part is Tyson has the process expertise. We understand what we need and we work with the technology suppliers to be able to produce a solution that's going to really fit a very focused application.
But Lynn says the plants were not the right place to develop and test new technologies.
The real difficult part for us was trying to develop things in the plants. The plants really have one job, that is to go make the greatest products that we can produce, right? We want to do that every day. We want to support those operations. And trying to take new things in, very, very difficult to do when a plant's already doing manufacturing, already doing production.
Lynn says plants will instead come to TMAC with problems that need robotic solutions. TMAC employees will then work with their developer partners to come up with automations that address those particular needs.
Robots traditionally are used for being able to handle applications that are very difficult, physically demanding applications. And as you can imagine, we have a lot that are doing that. So we want to be able to use automation to be able to provide more consistency to the processing, but really to help our team members eliminate some of the ergonomically difficult, physically demanding jobs.
Aside from working with robot manufacturers, Lynn says Tyson also works with companies that provide machine vision, which makes it possible for robots to sort and move products based on size, shape, and color.
So there's a color camera up here, and what it's doing is it's randomly placing these little Skittle pills, whatever you want to call them, and then the vision is actually guiding the robot to the right position to be able to pick up and sort.
By color.
So it's doing the position as well as the color recognition.
Lynn wraps up our tour of TMAC in a room that resembles the inside of a Tyson processing plant.
The key piece to this facility is our production environment lab. And so this lab is a total washdown environment lab. And so what this represents really is our ability to simulate, if you will, the production environment of what we have in our poultry facilities. Poultry or any of the protein processing facilities, not just poultry.
Lynn says the lab allows them to test robots and equipment to see how they will function in environments with temperatures as low as 40 degrees before the technology is shipped to a plant. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Tyson says it's invested $215 million in robotics and automation in the past 5 years. The company says it also wants to invest in local robotics teams, like the team from the Don Tyson School of Innovation, which will be traveling to Dubai for a competition later this year. Senior Abby Herrera is on the team that will be going to compete in the first global challenge.
So what it is, every country, over 180 countries were represented last year, got to send one team that represented their country, and we were chosen this year because we won the world championship in our regular, program, right? So this is a different program, and because of that, we were selected as Team USA.
Herrera says all the materials for the robot come in a kit to make sure every student around the world is able to participate. From there, it's up to the teams to figure out how to make the robot complete this objective.
There is a game release this year for First Global Challenge, and what the robot has to do, there's basically like volleyballs, and then there's little softballs, and there's a big tower that our robot has to score these into. But really, it's not about the robot game, it's more about interacting with people from different areas of the world.
Herrera says the work she's doing at the School of Innovation ties right into the work Tyson is doing at its new Manufacturing Automation Center.
We're the prime example, and I want to be humble here, but we are the ones that are going to be working with automation, but also developing this technology in the future. So I actually have the IT high school internship here, so I work here. But I think this is a great opportunity to see that this is going to be our future. And in 40 years, we're going to be doing things bigger and better than this.
Herrera says after she graduates, she plans to be the first person in her family to go to college, although she's not sure yet what she wants to study.
Doing robotics has made me more confused about what I want to do, just because I know there's so many options out there. And I feel like that's the biggest thing, is that students, especially first-generation students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, don't know that this is an opportunity for them.
To make sure Herrera and most of her team can attend the competition in Dubai, Tyson presented the group with a $15,000 check to offset their travel costs.
Okay, on the count of three, one, two.
The Economic Opportunity Agency is opening a new Head Start Center in Fayetteville. Thanks to a partnership with Fayetteville Public Schools, the center will be located on the Alps School of Innovation campus. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended a ribbon-cutting ceremony Friday, and she brings us this report.
The new facility will bring EOA's total number of centers to 7. Executive Director Delia Anderson Farmer says staff at the center will provide comprehensive early childhood development services and programs for 43 children ages 6 weeks old to 5 years old, as well as pregnant women.
This facility expands the number of children EOA serves, and it provides accessible location to families in need of Head Start and early Head Start services. Our mission is empowering children and families to learn, connect, and succeed. And we fulfill this mission through early childhood development, parent engagement, and family economic empowerment to break the cycle of poverty.
The center is a result of a partnership between EOA and Fayetteville Public Schools, who is providing affordable space for the nonprofit. FPS Superintendent John L. Colbert says the partnership is beneficial for the school district as well.
We are very, very excited because we believe in this partnership, because it's going to make a difference in the lives of kids and family. That's what we're about. You're preparing them for us, and we love that because we know that's where it begins, because research says you want to meet kids early. And you're doing a great job. We cannot say enough about this partnership because we believe and it is going to make a difference in the lives of kids. And that's what we're in this business about, making a difference in the lives of kids.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, children disadvantaged by poverty may experience a greater benefit from early childhood education because these programs seek to minimize gaps in school readiness between low-income and more economically advantaged children. Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan says encouragement can be very impactful for a child living in poverty.
As a mayor, I came from a four-room house that had two doors front and back and no running water. And I came from there to here because people believed in me and told me I could do things that I didn't think was possible. And I've carried that philosophy from what I've learned from people that invested in me all my life. And I've gone from there to here, and I can assure you one thing. I am not going to waste my time. I'm going to help every child that I possibly can.
Mayor Jordan says making this Head Start Center a reality creates a win-win situation.
Especially for children and families living at or below the federal poverty line. I can't tell you what a difference you all are making in these children's lives. You're giving some children some hope that some of them don't think they have a prayer. And that's what we're in the business. I always say, as I saw a quote once, we're dealers in hope.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
So access to high quality early childhood education programs give children, especially our most vulnerable children, the opportunity to grow and to develop their full potential.
EOA Executive Director Delia Anderson Farmer says people are recognizing the importance of the service they're providing.
Our legislators, our decision makers are recognizing the need for quality early childhood education programs. And so we actually received an additional grant for early Head Start services. And this is a culmination of that. And so we are so appreciative to be able to open up an additional center and be able to serve more children.
The new four-classroom facility will open August 19th.
We have kids already enrolled. We used the summertime to recruit and enroll children. And so we also serve students here on the campus of Alps who might be in need of our services. So it's a win-win for all of us.
She says there are now 3 Head Start centers in Fayetteville, and plans are in the works to open an additional one. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And ahead on this Monday edition of Ozarks, the first woman to be appointed to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
Something that I am passionate about is proving that the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is more than hooks and bullets.
Plus, Becca Martin Brown, the features editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, says you need to get your calendar ready because another entertainment season is upon us, the 2019-2020 season for the Alma Performing Arts Center. She has that list, as well as another one for entertainment for this week, all ahead on Ozarks at Large.
The City of Bella Vista will conduct an open house meeting discussing the proposed Mercy Way corridor improvements Monday, August 12th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the District Court Building. Located at 612 West Lancashire Boulevard in Bella Vista, this meeting will have no formal presentation. The public is invited to this meeting to view exhibits, ask questions, and offer comments. 91.3 is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of activities and living options from apartments to village homes, plus outdoor spaces, including access to city trails. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Classes for many school students in the region begin tomorrow. Classes on college campuses soon follow. First day for students at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, 1 week from today, August 19th. This year, a new chancellor, Dr. Teresa Riley, is on the UAFS campus. She was hired this spring from her most recent position as Senior Vice President for Student Affairs and University Administration at Texas A&M University, Kingsville. She began her new job in Fort Smith July 1st. Last week, we met with her in her office on the UAFS campus. She says she spent much of the first few weeks on the job meeting as many people as she can.
Finding out more about what they do and why they do it. That's important to me, to understand the motivation for people, that why is it that they love this place and have pride in it. And so that has been the fun part of the first, say, 30 days or so of the work, has been meeting people in the community and on campus.
What is the origin of their pride?
I think it's first a really robust history of the institution, that they have watched this place grow so much and become so much more than I think the original founders would have imagined in becoming a four-year institution, that they are incredibly proud of what has been the hard work of a lot of people, but also the support of the community means that we're able to make this affordable for students. So that's something that's been fun to learn about.
I watched the process as you went through, you and the other applicants. And one thing that came out was your desire for a communicative campus, for one that works together, and to use an often used cliche, mm-hmm. a rising tide lifting all boats.
I think the institution has so many great places of knowledge and expertise, and perhaps it's that the story isn't being told the way that it needs to be, how excellent the university is. And from my perspective, one of the reasons that I think I was selected for this position is my desire to be very transparent about strategies and to include everyone in the strategy process, whether that's creating strategies to improve academically or in terms of our enrollment and outreach of students, that everyone is going to be a valued partner in that, and that's going to be our employees, our students themselves, our foundation board members, our University of Arkansas system folks that are very, very supportive of this place, but also our community members who are completely reliant upon how we educate our students to the highest quality so that they're ready to become members of the community. So it's a nice cycle. And so my ability to get people involved in that process, to value their input, and to make sure then that we're communicating about this with everyone is, I think, pretty critical.
You mentioned perhaps the story hasn't been told appropriately. Here's your chance. Tell the story.
Well, one of the things that most people who are not engaged in higher education, as I am, do not realize is the importance of accreditation. And so what does that mean? It would be no different than seeing a stamp of approval or a seal of approval on any product, that someone has quality tested at the place and it meets the highest possible quality standards, is what accreditation bodies do. Those agencies actually test universities to make sure that they have the highest quality. So not only do we have individual programs that have reached that pinnacle of highest quality, but also the overall university has as well. So we have the Higher Learning Commission that accredits the institution. They just finished their four-year review of the institution with literally not one finding, not one thing that we needed to change to reach the highest standards, which is incredible. That really does not happen very often. And in fact, a couple of the reviewers said, you know, this happens very few times. times. And so the truth is, not only did you make it easy on us by being great, but also you made it easy on us by telling that story to us and giving us the data that we needed to know that it is great. So that's really helpful. We have programs like our College of Business that has AACSB accreditation. On their first try, they received that accreditation, which again is unheard of. And that means that they are in the top 5% of business colleges across the globe. Only 5% have that accreditation. So I'm not sure if we're telling some of those stories as, I think, clearly as we need to, and helping people to understand what that stamp of approval means for us.
Arkansas is among the states with the fewest people with college degrees. There's been a concerted effort at least for a decade or more. What can a university, be in Fort Smith or Fayetteville or Arkadelphia or whatever, do to make sure, and I know you don't serve just students from Arkansas, of course, but what can we do to make sure that there are more college degrees 5 years or 10 years or 15 years from now?
Well, first, I think we have to help students in high schools and even in junior high age, middle school age, to understand that their aptitudes for topical areas match what we offer in our institutions of higher education, that they don't have to stop. There doesn't have to be a stopping point after high school, but that really they need to consider additional education to be more workforce ready. One of the things that drew me here to UA Fort Smith was the fact that we have a pipeline of learning, that no matter the aptitude, the student can find a home here, can find a place academically to learn and grow and be successful. I think that's the critical part. We can provide access and opportunity, but if we don't have a success model and a care and support model for students, along with the challenge in a classroom, then they may not be successful. And we really have an obligation to make sure students in Arkansas understand that they can come and get certificate programs, that they can get associate's degrees, they can continue that pipeline of learning to a bachelor's degree, and see that as a foundational learning framework or pathway for success.
You mentioned one of the things that attracted you to UAFS. I hate moving across town. So it has to be, to see something that makes you want to move further than across town, there had to be an initial attraction, something that, or some things that you saw when you applied for this job. What were those?
So I felt and saw for myself when I was here the fact that people are energized and excited about what they get to do every day. The truth is, every student who walks across this campus, you can see and feel just this palpable energy in the people who work here about their ability to reach those students, to educate them, and to help them to be successful. That is contagious. That when I was here on campus, I felt like that my energy level just soared because I was also feeding off of the energy and excitement of the people around me. The students are remarkable people who truly aren't, not one of them is the same, and yet in this group of students, I could feel, again, their desire to learn, their desire to improve the place, but not just the university when I say place, but they understood an obligation to help improve communities and the region. So I have to tell you, it was just not even a question mark in my mind when President Bobbitt called to offer me the position, that I wanted to be part of something that felt high energy, high engagement, really high quality education. I was packing the minute he called. So it didn't bother me a bit to move here from Texas.
All right, so a little over a month now here, August 19th, or a little bit before the temperature, the tenor of the campus changes a little bit. What are you looking forward to once classes start in the fall semester?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited about having people back on campus. The breaks when we have a little lower traffic may feel good to be strategic and get some things accomplished, and yet they never feel good because they're not the high energy time of people between classes and people stopping each other for a hug on the sidewalk or a fist bump to say congratulations on a test score. I see faculty and students do that a lot in a mini celebration, if you will, of any achievement. It's that energy and that kind of engagement that I'm looking forward to when everyone gets back on the 19th.
Dr. Teresa Riley is the chancellor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. She also says that this fall, even with a new job on a new campus, is at least similar for her in one way to last autumn. It was last fall. She was spending time on several different campuses with all four of her children attending college.
and all four at different universities, which also meant that we visited lots of different universities. In some ways, a couple of them knew exactly what they wanted to do, where they wanted to be. They had these very distinctive thoughts about that process. And then my other two, not as much, and were exploring, and which was fun for me because I love to visit other universities. In that process, I did quite a bit of research on what attracts students to colleges. And there's a considerable body of research that says students know if there's a good fit to an institution within 15 minutes of arrival on the campus. It's everything from body language of people they're encountering to signage to the beauty of the campus and upkeep to truly just that experience of entering, sort of like you feel when you enter a new person's home, that there's a distinct feeling of you know what they value, you understand who they are just by entering the home. Same is true on a college campus, that you know what we value, how we behave, how we respond to one another, the respect and value that we give each other, and whether or not that fits into what you believe is your vision for your higher education experience. So in that vein, my kids all chose very different institutions, and I understand that students have to go through those experiences to determine if a place is the right fit for them. Institutions aren't going to be right for every single student. So from my perspective, one of the things I loved about the University of Arkansas system was that we're not encouraged to be cookie cutter institutions, that really being distinctive, having niches, both academically and in terms of engagement and opportunities for students, meant that we would have a distinctive set of students who would choose us first. And that's a pretty empowering thing to learn about through this process. And I really appreciate the U of A Board of Trustees empowering us to do those things that make us distinctive and that make any other school in the UA system distinctive.
We met with Dr. Teresa Riley in her office on the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus last week. Classes at UAFS begin a week from today. This is Ozarks at Large. It's 26 and a half minutes before 1. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are away from home for the next four nights after splitting a four-game series with Tulsa at Arvest Ballpark over the weekend. The Nats are in North Little Rock tonight to open the series with the Arkansas Travelers. Then Friday night, Tulsa back in Springdale for a weekend three-game series. Chances of the Naturals extending the season into the playoffs are dwindling. Northwest Arkansas begins tonight 11 and a half games out of first in the Texas League North. Three golfers who will be seniors at the University of Arkansas this fall are playing in the 119th U.S. Amateur Championship that begins today. Tyson Reeder, Luis Garza, and William Buell are all at Pinehurst in North Carolina for the tournament that runs through the 18th. Buell enters the tournament after winning the Canadian Amateur this past weekend. The volleyball season for John Brown University begins Wednesday afternoon. JBU scheduled to play Montana Tech in the Hope International Summer Slam in California Wednesday. By the end of the day Thursday, JBU will have played the first four matches of the season. First home match for JBU Friday, September 6th against Oklahoma City University. The University of Arkansas sports seasons are getting closer. The Razorback soccer team will make its home debut Thursday night with an exhibition match against Nebraska. This past Friday, the Razorbacks played to a 3-3 exhibition draw at Kansas State. Thursday night's home match is scheduled for a first kick at 7. It's free and open to the public. And the 2021 Arkansas football schedule now set. The final non-conference game to be put in place for that season now finalized. Rice will travel to Fayetteville for a game on September 4th, 2021. Other non-conference games that year, all in Fayetteville, include Texas, Georgia Southern, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. Jim Warnock returns to Hobbs State Park to talk about strategies for completing long hiking trips while remaining healthy and well-fed. Participants will see how he prepares and packs food for the long haul. Children and their parents or grandparents are welcome to join Warnock and his black lab, Hiker Dog, for a short walk on the Ozark Plateau Trail after the presentation. This takes place at Hobbs State Park Visitor Center Sunday, September 1st at 2 p.m. It's free. For more information, friendsofhobbs.com. The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission conserves and enhances fish and wildlife habits for sustainable public use. The agency is governed by a commission that's made up of 8 members with varying expertise and interests. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a newly appointed commissioner, the first woman to serve, is angling to make outdoor recreation an additional priority.
Anne-Marie DeRamis is a Little Rock native, but spent much of her childhood on her family's farm outside of Stuttgart.
I tagged along with my dad and brothers while they went duck hunting growing up. In fact, I'd been begging them to go. I was probably around 3 years old. And, you know, duck camp's not always the best place for a little girl. But anyway, I'd been begging to go. So finally, they let me tag along. And I sat out there with them in the flooded timber and all bundled up with my hot chocolate and honey bun and just had the time of my life. I loved every second of it. I love spending time with them, just an excuse to be with them. And that's really what lit the fire. That's how I got started. So, and then since then, I have stayed engaged, yes, with duck hunting, but also other aspects of the outdoors, hiking, biking, fishing. I'm very, very much into bass fishing specifically. And I'm fairly novice fly fisherman. And so I started doing that in the past few years. And it's been great to experience that in the natural state.
That enthusiasm for the outdoors led DeRamis, a 2013 graduate of the University of Arkansas Fayetteville in Journalism and Public Relations, to serve as a founding member of the Arkansas Outdoor Society, as well as on the Arkansas Game and Fish Foundation. The foundation, a fundraising auxiliary of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, facilitates acquisitions of facilities for conservation education programs, as well as lands for wildlife habitat and game and fish management, all for public access.
Really, how all this happened was my involvement with the Game and Fish Foundation. I served on the board since 2016. And became a familiar face throughout the agency and became very involved and hands-on. And so through that, I was actually approached about putting my name in the hat to become a commissioner. And at first I said, you know, why me? And the response was, you're what this is missing. Just someone young, energetic, someone who brings in some fresh ideas. And also someone who just has passion. Of course, all the commissioners have passion. There's no doubt about that. We all would not be in this position unless we truly, truly cared about this agency, our state, and the outdoors. And I'm very fortunate to work with all of them. In fact, we're quite the team, and they've been nothing but welcoming and been good teachers to me in the past couple months.
DeRamis says still her reaction to being appointed this summer to the commission by Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson took her by surprise.
Actually, I met with the governor and he said, I'm going to appoint you. And I think that my jaw dropped, in all honesty. I said, this is really happening. This is a dream come true. This is what I want to do. I think this is what I was born to do. And I was just truly honored and humbled. That's the best way to describe it.
The mission of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is to conserve and enhance Arkansas's fish and wildlife, as well as their habitats, while promoting sustainable use through public education. DeRamis says she's gotten a lot of queries about what she plans to do as commissioner.
I didn't come into this role with a planned out agenda. I came in to learn, came in to do the right thing, and that is what I plan on doing in the next few years, is become educated and hopefully make a difference. Now, something that I am passionate about is proving that the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is more than hooks and bullets. I mean, outdoor recreation in Arkansas generates more than $4.8 million a day. And so the Arkansas Game and Fish, we don't just need to be catering to hunting and fishing, although that is our primary source of revenue. That's just how it is. But we need to be reaching out to the hikers, the bikers, the bird watchers. There's just so much more that goes under that outdoor umbrella. Now, do I hope that eventually that leads to them buying a hunting or fishing license? Absolutely. So that's something that I would like to message out about the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
Doremus says, as commissioner, her door is always open to Arkansans with questions and issues and ideas.
Just know that I'm available. Don't be afraid to approach me. I may not have all the answers to your questions, but I can sure find out. And if you all ever have anything that you're concerned about, general question, please reach out to me. You can find my contact info on the Arkansas Game and Fish website, and this is going to be a fun 7 years.
Anne Marie Doremus lives in Little Rock with her husband Joe and their two dogs, a retriever and dachshund, quite a pair. Her term is set to expire June 30th, 2026. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Don't look now, but we're kind of moving into the middle of August with me to talk about what to expect from the first part of the middle of August. This is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. How you doing?
The sound you didn't hear was the sound of my notes just going, funk.
I mean,
how can it be this time of year?
Look, I thought May, June, July all went at their appropriate speeds. They didn't seem to go too fast or too slow. They just seemed like summer months. I don't know what's happened to August. It has just steamrolled.
I believe that you referred to it the other day as a fire hose.
Yes. Yes, it is. There's so much happening, and you can barely...
Because we're coming up on Roots Festival. That's going to be a week of crazy.
School starting, new season announcements, a much busier, unfortunately, sometimes, unfortunately, news cycle. Mm-hmm. Than usual for an August. It's just been madcap.
Theater Squared's new building is opening.
That's right.
So that's a whole big deal.
Right.
That's our cover for yesterday's What's Up. The Momentary is going to open one of these days in Bentonville.
They're going to have an event in October.
And there's going to, yeah. So.
Yes.
Let's talk about down the road a little.
Okay.
At the Alma Performing Arts Center.
They've got a season coming up.
They have a season coming up. Do not discount this performing arts center because it's down the road in Alma. It is a beautiful building.
Yep.
And Teresa Schlaubach, who is their director, works really hard to grab those one-offs that you can get because the theater company's traveling from Dallas to St. Louis.
Oklahoma City or something. Yeah.
And so she's got amazing stuff every year mixed in with the high school kids stuff and all the other things you expect at a school performing arts center. Coming this year, the opener on September 19th is Love Letters.
With a couple of familiar names.
Barry Bostwick and Barbara Eden.
Barry Bostwick, who was in Rocky Horror Picture Show and played the mayor on Spin City, and Barbara Eden.
I would love to see them in person. Wow.
And Love Letters is a script about love letters written over a long time.
It's a great show. I'm going to say this, and it's not going to come out right. It's a great show for an older set of actors because you can read the show.
Right.
You still have to be a great actor, but it doesn't require mountains of memorization.
Yeah.
So it'll be lovely to see the two of them. And then on October 8th, John McEwen and the String Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Right.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
And on October 16th, beautiful, the Carole King musical.
Which has, you can't have all of Carole King's great songs because that'd take you for 2 days, but it's got a lot of great Carole King music.
And again, these are all touring companies, just like you'd see at the Walton Arts Center or anywhere else.
Right.
It's just that she's grabbing them for one night only as they pass through.
Right.
The Christmas show, December 15th, is Daly and Vincent Christmas. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming February 22nd, I'm going to butcher his name, Steve Aguirre from Journey.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't know either, so it must be okay. Apparently, this is a huge concert with lights and sound and the whole Journey sort of experience. And then March 28th is a comedian. I don't know that she's done a comedian before. The comedian's name is Etta May. And she's been described as Minnie Pearl with a migraine.
Okay.
Or the polyester princess. She's
okay.
Originally from Bald Knob. Obviously clean comedy because Teresa Schlaubach's not going to book
anything else.
But if she's got, I think Minnie Pearl with a migraine means a little edgier version of Minnie Pearl.
Okay.
You can find out about all of this and the local productions, which include 1776 and Stuart Little, by Googling the Alma Performing Arts Center. But we can't leave you hanging. We've got to give you some stuff for this week, right?
Well, of course, of course.
So, hang on to your hat. That fire hose thing is about to happen.
All right.
Tomorrow, Terrific Tuesday at the Botanical Garden in Fayetteville, Jesse Dean. That's at 7 o'clock. It's free. Wednesday, live at the Five and Dime series in Bentonville at the Walmart Museum, a group called Blue Thread that includes Nicola Radin.
Mm-hmm.
This is jazz, 6 to 8 o'clock, also free. Thursday night, open mic night at the Fort Smith Main Library.
And this is kind of honoring Woodstock?
This is the Woodstock celebration from 7 to 8:30.
I was in the Fort Smith Library last week. Got a cup of coffee in Dewey's Cafe, and they've got the Woodstock posters up and everything. It looks like it's going to be a fun time.
Again, free.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, the Basin Spring Park music series, the Kate Brothers.
Oh, nice.
The Kate Brothers,
right.
Yeah. 5:30 to 7:30, free.
Okay.
And there's a concert on Saturday at 6:30 at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. It's a group called Dandelion Heart.
Oh, they're so fun. They're so good.
They describe them as folksy multi-part harmonies with melodic backing by cello, guitar, mandolin, and hand percussion. And it's $10.
So there you go.
Suggested donation.
Right, right.
If that doesn't keep you busy till I get back here on Friday.
Nothing will.
Nope.
All right, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Walton Arts Center extends their thanks and appreciation to their volunteers who commit their time, talents, and resources to maintaining the arts in the community. New volunteers are invited to join the team. New volunteer orientations will be held on three upcoming dates, August 21st, 27th, and September 7th. WaltonArtsCenter.org/volunteer for more information. The Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation is Arkansas's nonprofit dental health plan. With more than 30 years of experience, Delta Dental offers specialized dental coverage for employees and family members of Arkansas businesses, nonprofits, and governmental organizations with a mission to improve health and to be the leading force in the delivery of quality dental insurance services. More information at ArkansasMissionOfMercy.org.
Tomorrow night, a networking event for people involved or interested in the music industry in Arkansas will take place in Fayetteville. The Northwest Arkansas Music Industry Meetup will be held at George's Majestic Lounge. Robert Locke of Shindig Music, which is co-sponsoring the event, says the meetup started in the spring as a response to a perceived need in the music community.
We had been to, a half dozen different roundtables and music summits and all kinds of meetings related to Arkansas music. And for the most part, it was really lacking in our actual music scene, both on the industry end and especially on the musician end, whose voice should be probably listened to first. So that's kind of how the meetup started on, well, let's counter that and let's do one and let's invite everybody and let's also get the musicians there, because in our 3 years of doing Shindig, we've noticed that you might be able to be aware of someone, but you don't personally know them. And if you do personally meet them, dialogue tends to happen and you never know where the creativity goes. The next thing, they might be appearing at this festival or making a record here, or they come on KUAF and do an interview. And it's just really getting everyone to know each other and communicate and seeing what happens.
Locke says the previous two meetups, held this spring and summer, surpassed any expectations he and other organizers had for the event.
The first one was kind of like we were just going to wing it, and we were going to do it at Riley's, and then the event numbers started getting to a point where if these people actually show up, we can't do this at Riley's, or if we do at Riley's, it's just going to be really crowded. And so we contacted George's, and they were like, what is it? And we kind of told them what it was, and they're like, yeah, we'll do it over here. And the first one did around 250. So we were super surprised that it drew that many people. And then the fact that it's on a Tuesday at 6, it's just not really a good time to get people to come out, but they came out. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it. We had a ton of attention on Facebook. Everyone was asking when we were going to do the next one, when we weren't even planning on doing more than one. So we set up another one and decided, like, let's see how this one goes. And by the second one, we're like, hey, this is a quarterly thing now. We got to keep doing it.
Locke says the reach of each meetup has expanded. He hopes for that expansion to continue.
I mean, each time we do this, we extend the invite as far as, like, the industry. I mean, we've had every major festival, studio, label, nonprofit. We've got tourism coming. We've had U of A come. Now we've got, you know, Arkansongs, who's on NPR down. It's actually on NPR here. He's coming up. So it's like each time our crowd gets a little bigger and the reach we're getting as far as in the industry gets a little bigger. So it's just I'm just really kind of looking forward to how this is going to keep growing each time. We would love to eventually get like a music showcase or someone who makes guitars or makes amps or something like that to set up, maybe turn it into like a NAMM show type thing.
And Locke says anyone who is interested should show up to the event.
Oh, if you're a musician or if you work in the music community at any level, from live booking to sound to production to, hey, I make T-shirts for bands, I can do posters for bands. If you're even remotely connected to music in Arkansas, you should probably come.
The third quarterly Northwest Arkansas Music Industry Meetup begins at 6 tomorrow night at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. All right.
On February 24th, 1969, Arkansas-er Johnny Cash performed a concert before about 1,000 inmates in San Quentin Prison in California. It was the fourth time Cash had played San Quentin. The first time was January 1st, 1958, in the rain. And in attendance was future country music star Merle Haggard, who said he was mesmerized.
I tell you what, the show is being recorded and televised for England. They said, you got to do this song, you got to do that song, you know, you got to stand like this or act like this. I just don't get it, man. You know, I'm here to do what you want me to and what I want to do. Right? Okay. Yeah. So what do you want to hear? All right. I walk the line. Keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line.
The Johnny Cash at San Quentin concert featured June Carter, who had been married to Cash for less than a year, as well as the Statler brothers and Carl Perkins and Anita, Helen, and Mother Maybelle Carter. Cash's longtime partner and friend, Luther Perkins, had died in a fire the previous year. Bob Wooten had taken over on guitar.
We're sorry to say that Luther passed away 7 months ago after being with us for 13 years, Luther Perkins. And the fellow that is playing the guitar with us now is doing a wonderful job, but of course nobody can really replace Luther. How about one big cheer for Luther Perkins?
Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison album in 1968 had reinvigorated Cash's career. It was the best-selling Johnny Cash record in years. The live version of Folsom Prison Blues, recorded in Folsom Prison, hit number one on the charts, better than the original studio version. 1969's Johnny Cash at San Quentin was an even bigger hit than Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison.
I tried to put myself in your place, and I believe this is the way that I would feel about San Quentin.
The album Johnny Cash at San Quentin stayed number one for a month. Cash was named Country Music's Entertainer of the Year in 1969. The San Quentin album yielded another number one hit song, A Boy Named Sue. It was his biggest selling single ever. It was named the Country Music Association Single of the Year. Cash had just written the song San Quentin the day before. The prisoners liked that one so much they wanted to hear it again immediately.
One more time. Here again, San Quentin, just for you.
In 2000, more than three decades after the fact, the entire Johnny Cash at San Quentin concert was re-released. If anything, the issuance of the full concert only served to solidify Cash's already formidable musical and humanitarian reputations. Here in its entirety is Kingsland, Arkansas-born, Dias, Arkansas-raised Johnny Cash, live from his February 24, 1969 concert at San Quentin Prison with his autobiographical song, Starkville City Jail.
Well, we've been in several prisons, San Quentin and Folsom Prison and the Starkville, Mississippi Jail, and the El Paso Jail, and you wouldn't believe it, one night I got in jail in Starkville, Mississippi for picking flowers. I was walking down the street, you know, going to get me some cigarettes or something. About 2 o'clock in the morning after a show, I reached down and picked a dandelion here and a daisy there as I went along, and this car pulls up. I said, get it the hell in here, boy. What are you doing? I said, I'm just picking flowers. Well, $36 for picking flowers in a night in jail. God damn. You can't hardly win, can you? Damn. No telling what you'd do if you'd pull an apple or something. Well, I'd like to do this song on behalf of all you guys here at San Quentin to kind of get back at whoever you want to out there. In my case, I'd like to get back at the fella down in Starkville, Mississippi that still has my $36. Well, I left my motel room down at the Starkville Motel. The town had gone to sleep and I was feeling fairly well. I strolled along the sidewalk neath the sweet magnolia trees. I was whistling, picking flowers, swaying in the southern breeze. I found myself surrounded. One policeman said, that's him. Come along, wildflower child, don't you know that it's 2 a.m.? They're bound to get you, 'cause they got a curfew. And you go to the Starkville City Jail. Well, they threw me in the car and started driving into town. I said, what the hell did I do? And he said, shut up and sit down. Well, they emptied out my pockets, took my pills and guitar picks. I said, wait, my name is all shut up. Well, I sure was in a fix. The sergeant put me in a cell, then he went home for the night. I said, come back here, you so-and-so. I ain't being treated right. Well, they're bound to get you, 'cause they got a curfew. And you go to the Starkville City Jail. I started pacing back and forth, and now and then I'd yell and kick my $40 shoes against the steel door of my cell. I'd walk a while and kick a while, and all night nobody came. Then I sadly remembered they didn't even take my name. At 8 a.m. they let me out. I said, give me them things of mine. They give me a sneer and a guitar pick and a yeller dandelion. They're bound to get you, 'cause they got a curfew. And you go to the Starkville City Jail, and you go to the Starkville City Jail.
Cleveland County native Johnny Cash, live in San Quentin Prison from February 24th, 1969, with Starkville City Jail. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
Contributors to this edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, and Timothy Dennis, who gave us information regarding tomorrow night's music industry meetup. Timothy also mastered our show in the Harold and Blanche Koch News Studio. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can sample his music and latest CD, Safe and Sound, at DarylSean.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Osage Valley. Thanks so much for listening. You can find out more about us at OzarksAtLarge.com. We'll be back with another brand new show at noon and 7 p.m. tomorrow. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great rest of your Monday.